I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Today for you, ladies, we are going to make Mr. Sinatra's marinara sauce. He got his hand in the sauce yesterday and burned his feet.
No, it's not a marinara sauce. It's a fresh tomato sauce.
It's a fresh tomato. Like I said,
it takes about 12 minutes or 15 minutes. And
12 or 15 delicious. Minutes.
Are
it's
you,
delicious.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the Dead Celebrity Cookbook. Frank DeCaro, author of the Dead Celebrity Cookbook, will join us for a fascinating excursion into this terrifyingly tasty tome. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we dig up the past as we delve into the Dead Celebrity Cookbook. In this edition of our program, we are pleased to welcome Frank DeCaro, the author of the Dead Celebrity Cookbook. Mr. DeCaro is a well-known TV personality, having appeared as resident movie critic on The Daily Show for 7 seasons, and is currently host of the Frank DeCaro radio show, heard daily on Sirius XM Satellite. Over the next few segments, Frank DeCaro will help us open up various celebrity cookbook vaults as we exhume a copious amount of culinary classics from the Dead Celebrity Crypt. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to listen to our shovel-ready program, feel free to whistle past the kitchen as we pass away from the present to go 6 feet under into the past. Frank, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
I feel like I live in a TV country. I'm very happy to be with you, really.
Now, you are a man of many talents. Tell us what influenced you early on that made you gravitate toward the world of entertainment.
Well, there were two things I wanted to be. One was I wanted to be a performer, and the other was I wanted to be a critic, which is another name for a failed performer. But I took the safe route and I became a journalist, and I went to journalism school at Northwestern, and then I got newspaper jobs when there used to be such a thing as newspaper jobs, and I wrote about entertainment, and then I got oddly ended up writing about fashion for a long time, and then back into entertainment coverage, and it all ended up being very much pop culture oriented, but I always tried to write stuff that I thought was funny, and then that led to my doing a piece for Spy magazine, and that led to a stint on The Daily Show, and that of course got my juices flowing as a performer, and I was like, I want to be a performer now, and so that's kind of where my career has gone from journalism. I had a respectable career, and then the hamminess took over, and I became I decided it would be better to make less money and be a performer. that's what I've been doing since, when did I start? Since 96. I've been
wow.
doing that. Yeah, so it's been a long time. I mean, but when you started The Daily Show, there's nowhere to go but down, I'll tell you. It's like when that ended after 6.5 years, you're like, well, I guess that was an absolute golden introduction to television, to be on there before Jon Stewart and then after,
right.
You know, so both regimes and to have and been in those. And it's pretty cool to be on the hippest show on television when you just when you start out.
Yeah, and the show that wins the most Emmys. It's just crazy.
I know, but not when I was there. Apparently, I was holding it back. The 1 year we went to the Emmys, I don't think we won. You know, it was the 1 year we didn't win was the year that I was still involved with the show. No wonder they got rid of me. But no, it was a great, great time, and I'm so happy for them. They're so smart and so funny, and I'm glad Colbert is getting the love too now. At the last Emmys, he ended up winning in a way that they had not won before. I think it was they'd won for show but not writing, I think, or vice versa. But whatever it was new for them, and they deserve every bit of it.
Well, I guess the lesson for Jon Stewart is never have a guest host. You know.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, I think that might have been the reason. And but if I were back on, I'm sure they would stop winning Emmy Awards. It would be much. So, oh well, that's the way it goes.
So, what did you learn from that experience on The Daily Show?
That I'm an attention whore. I mean, I miss it. People say I miss you on The Daily Show. I said I miss me on The Daily Show. Please. It was a very fun thing, and it's really a pleasure. You do your best work when you're surrounded by smart people. You know, you really do. And when you're in, I think that's really the thing. It was a lot of smart people keeping you on your toes and making you want to be funnier and smarter and better and more timely. And I think that was really the thing. I just had no idea that you know, comedians talking about the news was going to become what everyone does. You know, I mean, that's all we have now. It used to be a satire of the news, and now the satire is the news. So our times have changed so much. So,
well, now you moved from television to radio with your radio show.
Wasn't my choice.
Yeah, how did that come about for you?
Well, I got let go from The Daily Show, and I sat around, you know, and it was the same. It was a heck of a year, 2003. I not only was let go there, but I had been an editor at TV Guide, and you know how you get it. There's a new boss comes in, and suddenly everything that made you so desirable is now something they hate.
Right.
I had that experience. So it was. It went from "we love your writing" to "I'm going to rewrite everything you've ever written," you know, and. And I would sit there, and I would do a piece for them, and then I'd do a piece for the New York Times, and the New York Times would change, like, three words. You know, if I'm good enough for the New York Times to not rewrite me, maybe I'm good enough for TV Guide not to rewrite me, too.
Right.
You know? But it became that. So 2003 was very hard, and then I started filling in on Sirius XM, and I'd never done radio other than in college. You know, I would do the college radio station and do shows. And I was filling in on talk shows there, and then one day I got a call saying, "We just canceled someone's show, and I know it's a Wednesday, but can you start on Monday with your own show? And we're flying in a producer who used to work on the show that we canceled, but we're keeping her and getting rid of the host, and would you like to do it?" And that's been almost 10 years now, and so I've been flapping my gums every day on Sirius XM for almost 10 years.
What is the most fulfilling thing for you doing a radio show?
Two things. Part of the joy of it is that you have a very intimate relationship with the listeners. You really are in their heads. Sometimes literally you're in their earbuds. You know, they're listening to you on their phones rather or whatever. And also you're in the car with them, so it's a very confined space, and they might be alone. So you're kind of alone with this one person, and you're chatting. It's as if you're having a phone conversation with just them. And so it's a very personal thing. And we meet incredible people. I mean, I've had everyone from B. Arthur to Justin Bieber on my show. And all I can tell you is B. Arthur was, God rest her soul, was a lot more fun than Justin Bieber. And she could teach him a few words because she swore like a sailor, because the joy of satellite radio is it's uncensored. So
right.
B. Arthur used language that would curl your hair. I remember years ago my therapist was telling me, was saying that her son, she said he wants to get inside the TV, and I told him you can't, and he said, you can! I was like, you really can get inside the TV, sort of, you know, not even by being on it, but just by talking to these people or reading about them, and you know, it's just amazing to me that I've gotten to do so much of this firsthand, you know. When you have, I went to the Emmy Awards this year, and, you know, and it's great, and I'm having a good time, but we're going to the HBO party, and there's Mel Brooks, and I had just interviewed him by phone, and I said, Mel, I'm the guy who wrote about you for the New York Times about when things were rotten. He cupped my face. My cheek and said, you're so sweet. I'm dying. It's like freaking Mel Brooks is cupping my fat cheek, you know? I just... And I had a great... He said, no BS, I enjoyed talking to you. And it's like, Mel Brooks said he enjoyed talking to me. Okay, so it's just... You have those and days and you're like the lucky... You feel like Pee Wee Herman, the luckiest boy on the planet.
Exactly. You know? And when you're on your deathbed, you'll be able to say that and feel the satisfaction of having Mel Brooks make that comment to you.
I get it. I hope he's there. I hope he gets to his before I get to mine. I mean, he's a lot older than I am, you know? I'm not to wish him ill, but, you know, he's got at least 20 years on me, so it's, you know, let him go first.
Well, I
love him to pieces, but he just makes me laugh. I mean, I told him, I said, I would not tell stories the way I tell stories were it not for all those years of listening to the 2,000-year-old man.
Right, exactly.
You know, he's affected my speech patterns. That's how much I love him. So.
Well, speaking of your deathbed...
Yeah, oh, good.
What was your inspiration for writing the Dead Celebrity Cookbook?
Two things. Part of it was, I think the sad, serious answer was I lost both my parents in the last 10 years, and I loved the people that they introduced me to through the television. So I kind of wanted to preserve the memory. I thought maybe if I preserved the memory of some of these celebrities, in some ways I'd be keeping their memory, my parents' memory alive too. In that they were the ones who exposed me to all these people. The other reason, and this is not so glum, we have interns on our show, and they're usually about 20 years old, and they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. The names I mentioned, they don't know anything. And
right.
And my feeling is if I have to know who One Direction is, then you have to know who Ella Fitzgerald is. That's the deal we've made. You know, if I have to, you know, I mean, there are plenty of young performers I think are as talented as any. I mean, I think Justin Timberlake is as talented as any performer that's ever been alive.
Right.
I think he's a good actor. He's a good singer. He couldn't be any cuter. He's funny. He's quick on his feet. You know, I mean, he could have held his own with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. He's as smart and clever as all that. Neil Patrick Harris, the same thing. Hugh Jackman, I think, is about as talented as it gets. You know, and just really, you know, Laurie Metcalf is as good an actress as any of the greats, you know, in Hollywood's golden era. I mean, she is a brilliant actress. But you know, you'd mention names of people who were in my life, you know, and I, and we're not even talking Hermione Gingold, you know. I mean, we're mentioning Montgomery, and they're like, what? You know,
yeah.
And I was like, she was on Bewitched. It's like, why would you not know who that is? So, but I mean, I look at people like Vincent Gardenia, and I'm like, Vincent Gardenia, you know. So I like the little more obscure ones. But I have to say, there was recently a video that was somebody uploaded to YouTube, and it was Hermione Gingold sitting in a chair next to Merv Griffin on his show, and she sang almost a cappella, I'd Be Surprisingly Good for You from Evita. And you watch it, and your entire feeling at the end of it is, and that is how that's done.
Exactly.
She sat from a sitting position on a talk show,
right,
performed a number, and she was in her 70s probably at the time, and just knocked it out of the park. And you're like, that's how you do that. But I just, someone like, you know, I like watching an old bat just go, well, I have to wipe the floor with this song now. Watch me do this. And they don't even break a sweat. And they're just kind of like, and done. You know, and that's kind of a great moment when you watch someone do it, especially when it's unexpected like that. I mean, she was, this Hermione Gingold clip on YouTube, I'm telling you, she's an old bat, and she's singing a song usually sung by someone who's like 25 or 26. And you're just like, okay. And no one can do that better, ever. You've just shown that is as good as that anyone's ever going to sing that song, and with more, no one has more nuance, more, you know, and it's I don't know. You have those moments, and you just have to sort of bow before them.
Now, in the Dead Celebrity Cookbook, first of all, your book is great and it's huge. It's got so many recipes. How did you find all those recipes for your book?
Decades. decades of collecting anything that had a celebrity recipe in it. I would buy it if it was a newspaper clipping, if it was I would go to flea markets if I saw a magazine, if I saw a celebrity benefit cookbook that people had sent in their recipes for. I just bought everything and amassed this huge collection. And I always like to say, if you don't do something with your collection, the people from Hoarders come and take it away. And so you have,
right.
You have to do something with your collections, and so that's where the Dead Celebrity Cookbook came from.
Frank, let's open up our Dead Celebrity Cookbook vault.
Let's.
Starting with Dinah Shore's Red Snapper, what is that recipe?
You need 4 red snapper fillets, half a stick of melted butter, salt and pepper to taste, the juice of 2 fresh limes, and a half a bunch of fresh parsley that you've chopped. And this is how you make it. You brush the red snapper fillets with melted butter, and you sprinkle on the salt and pepper, just easy as could be, and then broil quickly on each side under a very hot broiler. Sprinkle it with the lime juice, and then, before you're serving it, you pour in a little bit more of the melted butter, and you garnish with lime halves, and then you sprinkle with chopped parsley. It couldn't be easier. It's really quite delicious. And she was great. And I suggest, because Dinah Shore, no one ever looked better in a maxi skirt.
Right.
Quilted maxi skirt is the appropriate attire to wear for Dinah Shore's Red Snapper. That would be the best attire to wear. And you put on a Dinah Shore record, because people, you know, may not know, but she not only was a terrific talk show host and the girlfriend of Burt Reynolds for a long time.
Oh yeah. Well, that was a big thing in the 70s. That was a big
original
thing.
Cougar. Yeah. The original Cougar, I'm telling you, she was great. And we loved her a lot, but if you put on a maxi skirt and then at the end it goes mwah at the end of it, because that was her signature. So give a kiss to your house guests as they're leaving.
But, now, how did she showcase food on her various talk shows?
Oh, they were amazing. I mean, she was quite an accomplished cook, but she would have guests on, and the thrill would be you'd watch someone who would they'd sing a number maybe, and then they'd come out, and then suddenly there'd be the kitchen segment, and there's Charles Nelson Reilly, and they're making her snapper or whatever. So you'd watch celebrities in the kitchen, and it was fun to watch them do it, because they didn't always get it exactly right, and sometimes they'd make a little bit of a mess of it, and then they would joke and say, aha, but here we have it pre-made, and they'd come back, and it would be gorgeous, and everyone would love it. And the interesting thing, I was reading one of Mike Douglas's books, a great talk show host, of course. He said that no matter who was on his show, whether it was John and Yoko at the height of the Vietnam War, whoever, Muhammad Ali, whoever it was, they would get, 3,000 pieces of mail. If it was a recipe, they would get like 15,000 requests.
Wow.
So it was like, it was for some reason, people connect with watching celebrities cook on TV because it really is a humanizing moment. If you watch people make, their dinner or make a recipe, you might actually be better in the kitchen, than Bobby Darin, but you're never going to sing Splish Splash better than
right.
Never. Okay? That's the way it goes. You're never going to sing that song better, but you might, in fact, be able to make whatever he's made. His stir fry, you might be able to do better.
Well, speaking of Dinah, she had Andy Kaufman on one of her cooking segments. What happened there?
I can't find that footage, but apparently he dumped a pan of eggs over her head. And, as he was playing his lounge lizard character. And so he was a little bit much and a little disrespectful to our dear Dinah. Yeah, I don't like hearing that. That said, I would love to see the footage.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm nice, but not completely.
I think they
destroyed it, but yeah. Somebody might have it. You never know.
We're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with Frank DeCaro, author of the Dead Celebrity Cookbook, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine. I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Cook and cook and keep on cooking. This is the way to live. Cook and cook and keep on cooking. Everyone gather around the dinner table. Cook and cook and keep on cooking. This is the way to live. Cook and cook. cooking, keep on cooking. This is the way to eat. Bon appetit.
We're back again with Frank DeCaro, author of The Dead Celebrity Cookbook, right here on the TV Time Machine.
Well, Frank, our next funereal foodie comes from the queen of comedy, Lucille Ball's...
No, it's not a Lucille Ball. No.
Lucille Ball's Sunday Night Goulash. Now, what are the ghoulish ingredients of that goulash?
Okay, Lucille Ball's Sunday Night Goulash, you use 2 bunches of green onions, chop those, 2 large green peppers and chop those, 1/2 clove of garlic chopped, 2 pounds of ground beef, 1 large can of tomatoes, probably crushed tomatoes, I think would be good, and then 1/2 pound of small egg noodles. And what you do is you saute the veggies, the onions, the green pepper, and the garlic. Then you brown the meat, and you put that all together. And then you add the tomatoes, and you simmer it slowly, and you salt and pepper it to your taste. And then, at the last minute, you give about, if you've got about 1/2 hour left to go, you add the egg noodles. And you cook it all together, and bang, you've got a quick and easy goulash. And Lucy left behind a lot of recipes. For someone who didn't particularly love food, she was always hit up for recipes. And I think she would sort of see what her live-in cooks were making, and then offer up those. But Lucille Ball's Sunday Night Goulash is a lovely thing. And Sunday night was a big deal because at least when I was really little, it was only lasted a couple years, and I was way too young really to remember much about it. But my dad would cook on Sundays because we'd watch Ed Sullivan and eat grilled cheese. That was the big Sunday night treat, was Dad would give Mom the night off and we'd watch Ed Sullivan show. So that's why whenever I see people spinning plates on a stick, or a little Topo Gigio mouse, I like things like that. So I would do that. But Lucy's my favorite. We were just in a restaurant and they had I Love Lucy on, and it was one of the Hollywood episodes when she was, and there was the one where she was trying to get rid of the newspaper because it was when she had stolen John Wayne's footprints.
Right.
Oh, I was laughing my butt off, and it wasn't even with sound. We were just laughing, just looking at it, and I know some people find it they can watch Lucy and they say it just makes them uncomfortable because she's
really?
Always getting in such trouble. Yeah, once in a while I have a few friends who are like, I can't watch it. It just freaks me out. I cannot not laugh. I think I Love Lucy is as funny as anything will ever be. It's never going to be funnier than that.
I know, and I love those Hollywood episodes, especially the one with William Holden.
Which demonstrates that
William Holden could do comedy.
Yeah, if you're in that group. Well, it's funny, because Lucy was not a funny person, but she could do funny things, Yeah. Lucy wasn't funny in an interview, She didn't, which is a weird thing to think about, but it's true. She was not, she's not a hilarious raconteur when you see her, chit-chatting with, there's footage of her talking to Joan Rivers on The Tonight Show and then on Joan's own talk show, and, it's not... she's not the raconteur you'd assume. She's not funny on a couch, but boy, could she do hilarious stuff.
You know what the problem is? The problem is whenever she tries one of your recipes, it's a disaster, total disaster. I don't know what it is, but the souffle falls down, the cake hardens, you name it, disaster.
Now, just one more rigor recipe, Frank. Peter Falk's pork chops.
Oh, I love Peter Falk. Nobody liked Peter Falk more than I did. Oh, Columbo. Peter Falk's pork chops. Here's what you need to make them. 6 pork chops, 1 medium onion finely chopped, 1/4 cup of olive oil, 1/4 cup of white vinegar, some salt and pepper to taste, 1 teaspoon of thyme, 1 cup of water, 1/2 cup of liquid from jarred vinegar peppers, and then 1 cup or more of those vinegar peppers, and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch. And the way you make them is you preheat the oven to 350. You brown the pork chops in the olive oil in a heavy frying pan. And then you put the pork chops, once you've browned them, put them in a casserole. Then you cook the onions until translucent in the same oil. Put those in the casserole. Then you deglaze the pan with the white vinegar. You stir up all the little brown bits. Add that to the casserole along with the other ingredients, the vinegar, peppers, and everything. And you do that, and then you bake it for 1.5 hours. Actually, you put everything except the vinegar peppers in, and then you add the vinegar peppers after you've baked it. You cook it for 15 minutes more, and then you remove them to a warm serving plate, and you take 2 tablespoons of cornstarch and add it to the pan drippings, and you make a gravy, and you pour that over the top, and it is delicious.
I think that pork chops genuinely were Peter Falk's favorite food. Because there were several times during his career when he was being interviewed where he mentioned pork chops.
See, you got to love that. That's why I really, it was those kinds of things that make doing the Dead Celebrity Cookbook rewarding. Because you can have, you sort of say, I mean, sometimes you wonder, you look at it, it's like, did Michael Jackson really make sweet potato pie? Or did he just enjoy it? You know, with this, if he's going to mention, if Peter Falk is going to mention it that many times, he probably did make them.
And also the great thing about your book, you actually imagine these stars doing common everyday things like being in the kitchen, preparing food, being a normal person.
Yeah, but it was kind of a window into who they really were. And it was in those days we didn't get every tweet and every statistic and every sex tape and every, you know, it's just we're too intimate with celebrities now. In the old days, you kind of were champing at the bit for any scrap of of delicious insider dish because you didn't get it all the time. I mean, now you're like, I don't want to see photos from your colonoscopy, but it's we were a little too familiar with our celebrities. It was a little bit better when we had a little bit of mystery left. And so I got to meet Peter Falk, and that was pretty amazing to me.
Tell us about that.
I was doing, there was a What's My Line live on stage, and it was a stage version done here in L.A. and in New York for a while, but it was in L.A. that I met him, and it was the round where you're blindfolded, you know, and you have to guess who the famous celebrity is, and he came out, and whatever voice he was using, the moment he said, hello,
right,
something like that with a girl voice, I knew it was Peter Falk. Maybe I'm psychically linked to Peter Falk, but I was just like, that's Peter Falk.
Now, are there any other projects or endeavors you're working on at this time?
I'm trying to perform more, and I've got gigs here and there, which are really fun, and LA has been great for that. I've already done a few, and I've got more stuff lined up all the way through December, which is great, and the radio show on Sirius XM is now twice a day. We are on from 8 to 11 West or Pacific, and then noon to 3 as well, and it's heard all across North America, so people can listen to it. And I just was featured on a show called Extreme Collectors. My Batman collection was featured, and so that was very fun because I have a lot of Batman memorabilia, with my Batman stuff, and that was just on there, and that was very fun. But that was only in Canada, so they keep saying they're going to sell it to the States, so I hope that that happens. So.
Well, obviously your collection isn't too extreme, otherwise you'd be on Hoarders.
I know. There is not a dead cat under my super friend's carry-all case. No, thank heaven it's not. Yeah, it's not my. You do it over my Batman lunchbox. You will not find a dead rat. I don't think. So, although at Halloween time maybe you might, but you never know. But it's been fun, and I'm going to do this Dead Celebrity Italian Cookbook. But I'm sort of shooting to have it out in 2014 in time for Columbus Day, when it's Italian Heritage Month, and then you know they'll complain that I'm not putting a rosy enough face on
right.
being an Italian American, because that's the way it goes.
Frank, where can people purchase your books online, and where can they find out more about yourself and your radio show?
If they go to Amazon.com, they will be able to find my books. They can go to DeadCelebrityCookbook.com. That's a fun way to do it as well. And I would love it if they would like me on Facebook and then follow me on Twitter at Frank DiCaro Show. Do not bother the poor man who's just Frank DiCaro, because he doesn't like them. Yes, so he does not need to have crazy things tweeted at him. I live for it. He, however, is not. So at Frank DiCaro Show.
He's probably your biggest fan.
I don't know. It's very funny. His profile on Twitter says, happy, heterosexual, not the radio guy. So, no, I thought it was very funny. But you don't really want to be mistaken for anyone else. You know, I was in Disneyland and I got a shout out and they were like, Mr. DiCarlo, I love DiCaro. It's like, I'm not Yvonne DiCarlo. If I were Yvonne DiCarlo, I would be more fabulous, but I'd also be dead. I'm not Yvonne DiCarlo. So, part of me wishes I were her, but alive, but not. You know, I'll just be me because I'm still here, thank heaven. So we'll do it. But and this is what I always tell people: if you ever see me and you think and you want to say hello, do until as long as I'm on satellite radio or pay or basic cable. Anyone on those wants to be harassed in person. Okay, they want you to come over and say hello. If they're on a paid channel or in a Hollywood studio movie, maybe not. But everybody else is like, oh, thank God someone said hello, you know?
Well, I think it's very, very important for people to say hello to you before you pass, because after all, you are the author of the Dead Celebrity Cookbook. Frank DeCaro, the host of The Frank DeCaro Show, heard on Sirius Satellite Radio, and also the author of the Dead Celebrity Cookbook. Frank, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Thank you so much.